Hey there, podcast family. T-Bone here to talk about the 3D Dentist Digital Implant Continuum. Are you ready to start placing dental implants, but feeling a bit hesitant and or overwhelmed? I know that feeling. I've been there. Let's change that together. Imagine not just learning about dental implants in a classroom, but actually performing surgeries on real patients right here in North Carolina, guided every step of the way by our expert 3D mentors. This is dental implant learning at its best, using techniques that are safe, predictable, and confidence-boosting. They're exactly what I use in my own practice, so you know they work. Our course goes beyond clinical skills. We prepare you to successfully integrate high-demand implant services into your practice, transforming your career by attracting new patients and elevating your practice. And it doesn't end with the course. Completing our program is just the beginning of a new journey. You'll be a part of a community of confident, skilled dentists with ongoing support to ensure lasting success and growth. After all, this is about mastering a skill that can transform your career, just like it did for me. So, are you ready to take your practice to the next level? Visit www.3d-dentist.com, check out our upcoming sessions, and join us to revolutionize your practice. 3D Dentist is truly committed to helping dentists take control of their practice, finances, and future. Now let's get back to this week's episode.
Welcome to T-Bone Speaks with Dr. Tarun Agarwal, where our goal is to change the way you practice dentistry by helping you achieve clinical, financial, and personal balance. Now, here's your host, T-Bone.
Zach, how you doing, buddy?
Not too bad.
Thanks for coming over. Good seeing you.
Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Zach, what are you doing in Raleigh today?
I'm taking the Sirona 3D course.
All right, so you're taking the initial training that comes for those that buy the cone beam or get the cone beam technology for their practice.
Yes.
So day one was radiology.
Yes.
I think Dr. Green was the instructor today.
That's correct.
He did a pretty good job.
Very good.
That's good. It made a dull subject reasonable, right?
Oh, absolutely.
That's
absolutely
awesome. And then you're in for the shock tomorrow with me.
Yes.
So it's like nice and then nothing, then nice and then in your face a little bit.
Yeah.
So we'll see what kind of mood I'm in. So tell me what's on your mind. I mean, talk to me. So let me back up, okay? So your dad is a dentist.
Yes.
You're in Clarksville, Tennessee.
Yes.
You graduated in 2014?
16.
16. Wow, 2016. My math is bad. 2016, and you have joined your dad's practice as an associate directly out of school.
Yes.
Okay. How's that been?
It's been good. A lot better than school.
I don't think your dad listens to this.
No. I mean, when you look back and compare it with school, I don't think it was as smooth as I thought it would be. Not so much.
What were your expectations when you say not as smooth as you thought it would be?
Well, I think my expectations were set high as compared to a school. I mean, you know, you're told how amazing it's going to be and how great things are going to go.
In the real world.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So what were some of the struggles that you had?
Our biggest was transitioning from one doctor to two doctors in an office. And he'd started in 93 and kind of been...
So he's like 15 years in? No. 25 years in.
Yes.
25 years in before he brought you in.
Yes.
He's kind of set. He ruled the roost, right?
Right. And not that he's a dictator or anything like that. I think even the staff, a lot of them had known me growing up.
You know, that's a staff is an infection, just so you know.
A lot of the team knew me since I've been young. And so that's a bit of a transition. Really not tough and not as bad as I've heard.
Do you think they respected you a little bit less? They thought of you as a little kid that they knew or the teenager that they knew?
I think on some levels, yes.
Yeah.
Never directly, but I'm sure it would have been vastly different had it been someone they didn't know.
Yeah. But I think they also had more trust in you than somebody straight off the street, let's say, for example.
Right. I think that's definitely true. So, that was a small part of the transition. The others, it was a smaller office. We're kind of restricted by space.
Okay.
I'm left-handed, so I'm basically a kind of a pain in the butt ergonomically, just because...
Because you had side delivery.
Right. And so three operatories and two of them were really tough for me to use, and so I basically worked out of one.
One. So when you say three doctor operatories?
Yes.
Two
yes.
hygiene operatories?
Three hygiene.
So you had six operatories?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and so that's when we started looking at buying or building or renovating and then and kind of exploring
our options. Scary for your dad to do?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he knew.
Was he worried that you were going to leave?
No, I think he knew I was staying put. I think it's just the investment, and not that he's wanting to retire. He's 56 or so, and he's not wanting to retire. But that's, you know, that's a big bite to take, I think, later in your career. But I've got a younger brother who's also going to dental school now, or starting this summer. So that kind of helps.
So that secures it a little bit.
Right. I think confirmed the direction we took.
And so you're walking into a practice, you're doing okay there. I always say one of the biggest mistakes I made when I started my practice was not being an associate somewhere else to get some money in to pay the bills. I depended solely on my practice. So when you started, were you full-time in your dad's practice or?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, they're 5 days a week. I also, I guess you could say, moonlighted at another practice on Tuesdays and Thursdays, I believe. Mid-afternoon and go work 3 to 8.
3 o'clock to 8 o'clock at night?
Yes.
2 days a week?
Yes.
So this whole thing where I think millennials are lazy is probably not true.
Oh, I think a lot of us are lazy.
But you work 5 days a week, and then you work from 3 to 8 a couple of days a week.
Right, and I did some Saturdays as well.
And you did some Saturdays?
Yeah. Well, if you need the money, you can't complain too much.
Sure.
And I think it's a little different, you know, talking to my dad about how things were when he started out, and that was one of the biggest, you know, I guess, quote-unquote marketing things he did was answer the phone on Saturdays.
Right.
When he started, he said no one did, and so that was kind of our initial thought. Instead of dumping a lot of money into marketing, let's just expand hours that were already there.
Smart. I mean, you know, I was going to say that I think you guys can run two doctors out of six operatories. You know, it requires a mindset shift, and that's hard. And I'm surprised you didn't say the biggest challenge for you has been not being able to implement the change or the updating. When I say updating, I'm not talking about like the place was ugly or anything like that. Just the updating of everything. I mean, dentistry 25 years is very different, you know, and it's very easy for us to get complacent. As somebody that's been in practice 18 years, it's very easy to get complacent and let things go dormant to a certain degree.
Right. Well, you know, my dad's rather receptive to change. I think just knowing how to go about it and us both being on the same page at the same time is certainly an issue. I mean, for instance, the CBCT, I mean, he got that before I joined the practice because he saw the value of it in the future. Wasn't using it a lot, though.
Okay.
And that's something we've struggled with implementing, is finding its role besides the occasional cracked tooth or implant.
The obvious things.
Right.
Yeah, beyond the obvious. I want to come back to that for a second.
Sure.
So you said your dad bought it before you came in.
Right.
But he didn't use it much. Do you think he purposely didn't intend to use it much in the beginning?
I don't think so. I think he was busy with what he was doing, mm-hmm. and he was, hopeful that I think I would use it more, eventually. Get me
so what you had shared with me is his Panorex had died.
Right.
And that he had to get something new, and he said, and so tell me if I'm saying this incorrectly, he had to buy something new no matter what.
Right.
And he said, well, my son's coming in, this is the future, let me go ahead and maybe I'll buy it a year early, but I'll go ahead and have it so it's ready to go. So instead of buying another Panorex or suffering without one, let me just go ahead and bite the bullet now, so that way we're ready to go when young Zachary comes in.
Exactly, yeah, that was his plan.
Good. And then I do have to make a quick millennial comment for you.
Sure.
You did live with your parents when you first came out of school?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, whole year.
And Tide Pods?
I snack on them daily.
So, but I don't understand. I have no, you only because you made this joke to me about Tide Pods did I say it back to you. What are Tide Pods? What is the joke about Tide Pods?
I'm honestly not sure. I think it's the colorful packaging.
And so that it looks like food?
Some
cases. It can't possibly taste any good.
I imagine it doesn't. I haven't actually tried any. But
you said you eat them daily.
It's a millennial joke.
I'm messing with you. All right, so let's get into an area that I'm very familiar with and somewhat of a self-proclaimed expert, is utilizing your cone beam. So what do you think, why don't you lead the conversation there if you don't mind? So what is it that you think you want the cone beam to do, or what are your thoughts, fears, concerns? hopes for that type of technology?
Well, from what I understand, what I've seen so far, diagnosis is the biggest, I guess the biggest takeaway I'm getting out of it a lot, most of the time when I'm using it.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey, podcast family, T-Bone here. Are you a dentist looking to elevate your practice and profits? Then pay close attention. Introducing the 3D Business Mastermind, the dental business coaching program designed for dentists who want to see real results. I've walked the path of practice ownership for nearly 25 years. I know your challenges. I felt your pain. This is your opportunity to overcome the chaos, the busyness, and the financial frustrations of owning a dental practice. Imagine a dental practice where your appointment book is highly productive, doing the dentistry you enjoy, your team is self-motivated, and your profits keep climbing. That's what the 3D Business Mastermind is all about. In this exclusive mastermind, you'll join a league of ambitious dentists driven to elevate their practices. You'll gain access to proven strategies, personalized coaching, and a community that understands your journey. So if you're ready to supercharge your dental practice and enjoy the success you deserve, visit www.3d-dentists.com and take the first step towards a brighter future in dentistry by filling out the 3D Business Mastermind application. Now, let's get to this week's episode.
For a certain purpose, I can't figure out exactly what's going on. I end up finding other coincidental issues or pathology, and I think that's where its role is again that initial diagnosis, and not just used when I can't, you know, find anything else.
Right. So I think the first thing I'm hearing, and we talked about this a little bit earlier, was you got to stop using it when you think you need it. You got to start using it when you don't think you need it, and that's when it hits its true value. And to me, that is a matter of making cone beam the standard of care in your office. And that may mean taking it on 90, 95% of your patients. And one of the things that we've done in our practice is we made cone beam standard of care. It's replaced our Panorex. Everywhere we would normally use a Panorex, that's what we use. We take a three-dimensional radiograph, and then we take intraoral x-ray, 7 intraorals to complete our full mouth series. So I'd encourage you to go back and implement that as soon as you can.
Do you think that was easy for you to implement the change? I mean, not that I'm complaining about particular team members, but sure, not everyone's very receptive to change. Most people resist it, at least initially.
But your team was used to taking Panorexes, correct?
Right.
So this is just a three-dimensional Panorex.
Right.
See, physically, there is no change.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I mean, literally, they put the patient in the machine the same way. Instead of pressing 2D, they press 3D, and it takes the x-ray. So there really isn't much of a change to them. There's actually no change to them. The only change is to you. And that's your need to review the scan. And I use the word review instead of read, because to me there's a very big difference. As a general dentist, we don't read the scan. We review the scan. Reading is done by a professional, oral maxillofacial radiologist, who truly reads the scan. So I like to use the word review the scan. I want to make sure I keep people understanding that, you know, there are limitations in what we can do. I mean, there's only so much knowledge. There's a reason there's a residency program for
right? Do you often have somebody read your scans?
Or? I wouldn't say, define often.
A few times a month? Or
maybe, yeah. Make once or twice a month max.
Okay.
Max. So if you define that as often, then yes. I would say once or twice a month is nothing. Given that we're probably taking, my guess would be 80 to 100 scans a month.
Okay. That's a pretty low percentage.
That's a low, we're talking 1 to 2% basically are getting read. So by a professional reader, every scan gets reviewed.
Okay.
So I would actually argue we're probably taking more than 100 scans a month easily, actually, now that I think about it. So, all right, so that's one concern. What were your expectations of cone beam? What did you think it was going to do for your practice? When you walked into it, what were you expecting out of it?
Well, honestly, my first thought was implants.
Implants, okay.
Yeah, implants.
So where are you at with that personally?
Just started placing them.
Okay.
Just started. Just did my first 4 this last week.
4 in a week.
One was last week, 3 was beginning of this week.
Okay, so, yeah. but that's a good number.
Yeah. Yeah,
if you can keep that trend up, you won't be doing fillings very much.
That's what I'm hoping.
Yeah, that's what you're hoping. Yeah. So that to me, what that sounds like is you, and your dad doesn't have a desire to do these.
I think he will eventually.
Okay.
He's referred them out mostly. And so that's another thing that I, you always hear as an associate, try adding
procedures.
Services, adding procedures. Yeah. You know, he does a lot of his, most of his own endo, wisdom teeth, and clear correct, and so on and so forth. So there was not a lot of opportunity, and implants was one of the things that he wasn't currently doing.
So real quick, so there's not a lot of opportunity. So let's dispel that myth, okay? So I want to go over some of the things that are available. I'm not saying they're all right for you. I'm not saying you'll even like them, okay? But your dad is not a prototypical general dentist that's a drill, fill, and bill, right, mainly restorative dentist. He does some minor surgery, is what I would call it. He does his own endo, vast majority of his molars even,
yes,
which is definitely different from most general dentists of his era.
Yep.
So you have the opportunity to add dental implants, okay? And if you don't mind me asking, what's the size of your practice? You have 3 hygienists, so your patient base is probably in the 3,000, 3,500.
That sounds about right.
Active patient base. Now, a number of charts is probably 10,000, 20,000.
It's
probably the entire city of Clarksville
at
one point in time, right? But we're probably in the 3,000, 3,500 ballpark, okay? Just for my math, let's use 3,000. Okay, so 3,000 means there are about 20 to 25 implants, statistically speaking, in your practice already. Okay, so that's an entire opportunity there. Just base averages. If you steal a little business from your surgeons by being able to do some of that, there's probably legitimately 50 implants a year in your practice. With a little bit of marketing, you should be able to hit that 50 number a year. And when I say marketing, it's not about active marketing. It's just part of my marketing package that what we do, we want people to know that we provide this procedure. There's 50 implants a year easily in your practice. Using the average number of $3,000 for placement and restoration, that's $150,000 in revenue right there. Okay, and then I would tell you another area is sleep. Okay, and maybe you're not ready for that, but these are the things. So now you're looking at 3,000 people, 3,000 active patients. You're probably looking somewhere in the 300 sleep apneics in your practice. Probably a legitimate number there is get 10 to 15% into treatment. So somewhere in the 30 to 50 ballpark. Okay, so you're probably gonna, let's call it $1,500, $2,000 for reimbursement there. So you're probably adding another, what is it, $100,000 right there,
like
maybe
that,
a little bit more.
Yeah.
So we're already at $250,000 if you have that skill set, correct?
Right.
Then there's things like infant phrenectomies. I don't know, I'm not saying you should do that. There's adolescent orthodontics. You know, your dad's dabbling in clear correct.
Yes.
So there's the opportunity for you to really own adult orthodontics and possibly adolescent orthodontics. Certainly adolescent orthodontics requires a lot more training. Adult cosmetic orthodontics, Invisalign, clear correct. I'm partial to Invisalign. Products like that. There's 30 to 40 cases a year in your practice right there. An average case fee of $4,000 there, we're adding another $120,000 in revenue there, right? And that's before you do any of the overflow general dentistry.
Right.
So when I hear people say that there's not a lot of opportunity, that's if you say, hey, I'm going to be more of the same.
Right.
In other words, you're going to come in and do more of what your dad's already doing.
Yeah. I think I should have qualified it with my current skill set.
Right.
Yeah.
But then your focus should be on that, right?
That's true. Yeah. I mean, I don't think you can go out and learn everything in 1 year.
No, of course.
But I like to try to make a plan, and I set a goal for the implant course.
Let's talk about that. So you're one of the first people I've talked to at your age, 1 or 2 years out of school, that set a plan or a goal of what they want to do. So talk to me about that. What kind of plan or goal have you made for your CE, for your professional development?
I wanted to add a service per year.
Okay, that's great.
And the first goal is implants. I was just most interested in it and saw the most opportunity.
Yes,
there,
absolutely.
I think.
And it fit with the technology that you have.
Yeah, and it didn't, exactly. We had the hardest part, I feel like. Yeah. Not the hardest, but
it helps a lot.
That's a big hurdle.
Yeah, it helps a lot.
Especially for cherry picking, I think, the easier cases. You know, I didn't quite get to it within the first year. I kind of set up a plan. I looked at a lot of different courses, and then, you know, ultimately it came down to, you know, convenience and then affordability as well. I didn't have a big budget for CE, but I felt like I couldn't. That was my best investment. I feel like a lot of people, a lot of classmates got out and they're making investments in houses and cars and other things like that.
You think
that.
That's true? You think a lot of people do that? You think that's us old people, quote unquote, old people making this stuff up?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think it's kind of true for most of the American population. Not, I guess I shouldn't make that broad of generalizations, but
that's probably a fair
statement. I have a lot of patients who will drive a brand new car, and I know the costs of them.
Yeah.
I've looked at them.
I mean, you just do a Google search, and you can find it.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. But, you know, they didn't have dental insurance for 3 years, so they didn't come and get their teeth cleaned once.
Right.
And it's just all I think about value, the value that people see in the product that they're getting.
Right.
And so rather than that car payment, I set it aside for the, not to say I'm not going to get a new car, because I'm sure I probably can't resist for that long. But that was my biggest goal at the beginning.
Well, I think now is a good time to take a break for a second.
Sure.
I want to thank our sponsor for this podcast. That sponsor is me.
Well, thank you.
So I want to thank myself. And one of the things I get asked a lot is, why do I do the podcast? What is it that I do? And ultimately, I have three things that I do for the dental profession outside of being a practitioner. One is I provide podcasts, online education in terms of social media. I just like to share. And part of that is the more feedback I get from people, the more questions they submit, the more topics I have to share. When people don't ask questions, I assume they know everything, so I don't respond with anything. Secondly is I do a lot of less speaking, but I do speaking now, about 12 events per year. So for larger study clubs or larger organizations, I'm happy to come out and do some speaking. And then the third thing is we do hands-on training at our office, at our training center. And I think you're probably a little surprised at the training center.
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's not. It's okay.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, to have your own computer on your desk and
Very nice.
To be able to have all the software. I don't think I do a good enough job of telling people what it is that we have. I just, we got a little training center.
Yeah, kind of modest.
Yeah, I'm a little modest. I'm not so modest about many things in my life, but my home, those kind of things I'm a little modest about. But so back to our regularly scheduled program now.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. You were asking about my generation and older people kind of making up those generalizations about how we'll spend money on other things,
right?
And I don't think it's true for everyone. I have a lot of people that are actively learning and taking courses and trying to advance their career early on. But I think there are a lot, when you mentioned the price of some CE courses, they go, no way, I'm spending that much money right now. I have loans to pay for, and I've got rent or mortgage and first year associates aren't always.
I have a very strong belief on that. And that belief comes not because I'm an educator and I have classes to sell, but it was a fundamental reason. I believe there are many reasons for my success, okay? What I believe is success, at least, okay? But one of the most important things I did straight out of school was I committed to take education. I made decisions about where I spent my money. I literally lived off of, I think my monthly budget for living was $2,000 a month. I think it's those choices I made. Just like when you invest money, you have doubling cycles. When you invest in CE, so a lot of your friends may say, well, when I make more money, I'll invest in the CE, correct?
Right.
I'll do that in 5 years or 6 years.
Right.
And the truth is, let's pretend they actually do it, okay? But what I say is, the earlier you learn, the more years you have to recoup that investment.
Right.
Like, I took live patient education, literally 2 months or 3 months out of school, I was doing a live veneer case, like where I took a patient and prepped the teeth, had somebody, over my shoulder watching me and helping me do it. And people, when I was in that class, I was surrounded by lots of 45, 50-year-olds. at the time, and they looked at me like, man, that's awesome that you're doing this at this age. And, you know, my response was, well, the sooner I learn it, the more number of years. Like, you get, like, somebody at that, like your dad, for example, if he learns how to do something new today, for example, like if he starts implants, he only gets 10 or 12 years
right.
of placing implants. You get 30 years of that education, right? That benefit of that. So to me, it's massive. The earlier you can take education. And the other thing I want to, and I want to move on from this topic, but the other thing I want to say to you on the people buying things, I think you're being a little bit cautious in when you say maybe not everybody. I think a lot of people are like that. And I think the big difference is external pressures. I can't tell you the number of dentists, male dentist friends I have who have said, my wife is forcing me to buy a new house, okay? Or how many female dentist friends that say, my husband wants to buy big TVs and do these vacations or go on all these trips and things. And I think we have to fight that urge or have really tough and hard conversations with our spouses or significant others about how every dollar you make goes into the best investment you can make. And that best investment is you. There's no better investment that you'll ever make than investing in you. So I had a friends ask me once, say, well, so what money, where do you, you know, the money you make, what do you invest in? I go, I invest in the best thing possible. I invest in myself. Every dollar I make or everything I do, I keep putting it back in me. And I don't put it all back in me. It's something at some point I want to live and, you know, save for retirement and things like that. But I put as much as I can back in myself. It is the safest and most secure investment you'll ever make. And that is the investment in yourself.
Oh, I think you're right. Not to linger too long on the topic. I think.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hello, podcast family. T-Bone here, bringing you our newest live patient implant training, Full Arch Express. For dentists already placing implants and ready to level up and continue building their implant practice, this is the golden ticket. We're diving deep into full arch implants, the hottest game changer in implant dentistry. In this program, we tackle both overdentures and all-on-X fixed hybrids, mastering techniques that are essential for modern, comprehensive dental care. It's about getting your hands on the tools and techniques that will replace the doubt and fear with confidence and predictability. Here's the kicker. There's live patient training right here in North Carolina. You're not just learning theories. You're in the operatory doing real work on real patient from start to finish, guided one-on-one by our expert 3D mentors. You'll learn the nuances of each approach, ensuring you can cater to a wide range of patients to maximize revenue. Speaking of revenue, with me, you know it's not just about the clinical skills. We're bringing business into this aspect too, teaching you how to integrate these advanced services profitably into your practice. So are you ready to rise up to the top in implant dentistry? Join us at the Full Arch Express. This isn't just another course, it's a career-defining leap. Head to www.3ddentist.com to enroll in our next session. 3D Dentist is truly committed to helping dentists take control of their practice, finances, and future. Now, back to this week's episode.
Certainly right, certainly about my generation, but a lot I hear sometimes from the generations above me. I know I asked an older dentist about his implant journey and where it began, and he didn't necessarily discourage me, but he kind of made it sound like, oh, well, you need to be restoring them, and you need to be practicing. I practiced for many years before I learned how to do them, and kind of like you haven't earned the right to start doing those, and I don't know if it's just that mentality, you got to pay your dues, but that was kind of surprising. And
you paid your dues.
Well, it's expensive.
No, but you're paying your dues, right? You know, I think there's some credence to that, okay? What I always say to people is, listen, what took my generation 8 to 10 years to get comfortable to do, you guys are getting comfortable to do in 2 to 3 years, okay? And that's paying, the level of paying, the amount of time it takes to pay your dues, the timeline scrunches,
right?
Okay, technology. Okay, so number one, when I came out of school, I didn't talk to any dentists. There was no community. Like, you literally practiced alone, right? And then Dentaltown came around, okay? And then social media came around. And tell me this, do you spend time learning from other dentists? Do you know a lot of dentists outside of your area through social media?
Absolutely.
And see, so to me, what dentists only met once in a while at their annual, or sorry, their monthly county society meeting. Yeah. Like we meet with and converse with people every day, multiple times per day, in that level. So we're doing that 30 times a month where they did it once a month.
Yeah.
So everything is compressed. Okay, it's not that you're not putting your time in, you're just compressing the amount of time that it takes to get there. And I think this is a soapbox for me, is what you just said. My assumption is the person that told you this is between 40 and 55. Okay, would I be right about that?
Yes.
Okay, that person is the endangered species of dentistry. My generation, my age, not me. Okay, I'm smart enough not to be there, but my species, my generation, that 40 to 55 age, we've got too much time left where young bucks like you are gonna run all over us. And as much as I make fun of the millennials, I'm not gonna let you guys beat me. You can beat the rest of them, okay, but you're not gonna beat me. Okay, I'm not saying you're gonna be below me, but we'll run neck and neck until I'm done, because I'm committed to that. So let's talk a little bit about some of the struggles or questions you have in your practice. Like we were talking about hygiene a little bit earlier.
Yeah, well, the first one was, I think, clear expectations and for compensation.
Yeah.
That was an interesting conversation. There's always so much debate around.
Was that different than you've heard before?
No, yeah, actually, yeah. Yes. That was really refreshing in that. My questions were the whole compensation. Should it be the hourly rate? Should it be based on, should they be like an associate, like get paid like I do on what they produce? And
well, I think, I don't think it should be a direct compensation like an associate. So let me kind of bring our listeners into the conversation that we had. I have a frank conversation with my team members now, okay? For the ones that have been with me long enough to where I didn't have that conversation before, I have it now, and the people coming in, I have it now. And I would have this with you as an associate. I would say, listen, your degree affords you a pay range, a compensation range. Let's use assistants in my area of anywhere between $16 and $26, $27, maybe $28, okay? So what that person, that $27, $28 looks like to me, I write it down. And in my practice, which is going to be different from every practice, okay, because of the technology and things, is number one, I need to be able to look at my assistant Whitney and I need to say, hey, Whitney, Zach needs an implant on site number 13. I'd like to see him back in a couple of days to do that. And Whitney will know we need a combing, we need a Cerex scan, we need to design a fake tooth, we need to export it out, we need to integrate that data together, make it ready so all I have to do is walk in, and she'll actually leave it up on my computer, so when I come in between a patient, I see it on my computer, I go, okay, I'll go ahead and plan it, I'll export the file from there, and she'll design the guide, mill the guide, get everything ready to go, right? So to me, that's how I define what a 20, the top end assistant makes, okay? And then I tell my assistants, and hygienists are the same way, okay? I tell them, now, in my office, you will never have a top end, okay? But these are the skill sets I need for you to be paid on the top end of the scale based on your degree, okay? But you can always make more. And the way to make more is for you to add procedures or champion a service, okay? So I'll use Liz as an example of my practice. So Liz champions sleep in my practice. You talked to Sully about this as well, correct?
Yes, I did.
And you were probably shocked at the numbers he's done with sleep.
Yes.
Okay, and he and I have something in common. He steals everything from me, just so you know, okay? Is that we both dedicate a human being to that. Like we have someone in our practice who champions sleep apnea appliances in our practice. He has someone in his practice who champions sleep apnea appliances. And there's a reason we do those numbers that we do, because we have somebody whose compensation is somewhat directly tied to it, not on a percentage basis, but on a basis of how well that department performs. So we create that. So I tell my assistants, well, listen, at some point you're gonna hit this ceiling here, and that's what a true chair-side assistant is gonna get you, but you can go above and beyond. Like Whitney, for example, my chairside assistant today, I want her to champion Invisalign. Okay, my goal is I want to do 100 cases a year. Okay, so if you can get me to 100 cases a year, you'll make plenty of money. Okay, you'll make more than anybody else is paying you, or would pay you in this area. Because you're going to produce direct revenue for me. And you're going to own it, you're going to make it so I don't have to deal with it. You're going to be able to take the digital impressions, you're going to be able to do it. You'll be able to preview the ClinChecks, look at them with, you know, somewhat of my eye, so some of the things that the basics that I need, so that those are done. So I try to have that conversation with my team members so that there's no expectations. And then I also think that you have to have some type of quote-unquote bonus program in place so that people don't feel like they're stuck at a level. So in other words, as the practice does better, they do better as well. And I think those are some of the keys to handling the tough conversation of compensation, because it's a tough conversation to have.
It is, and it's hard,
especially when we make so much.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
It means generally speaking, we make more than 98% of the world.
Oh yeah, certainly.
You know, so it's hard to have that conversation sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think one of the things we run into is that, you know, every time, you know, that first of the year comes up or their anniversary, is that that conversation gets brought up. And I think, you know, unfortunately, I've seen just in the short time I've been practicing, some reimbursements going down.
Right.
And that's where we run into that issue, is that they want to be paid more, and they're, I'm sure, working the same, you know, hours and effort, but that goes down. So that's really good. I never thought about it that way, as far as getting them to champion a certain product.
Or let them own their success.
Yeah, yeah. And that's something I'm certainly guilty of, is not setting clear expectations for that.
And that comes with time, experience, comfort. Much easier for me to do. I'm the owner of the practice, right?
Right.
You know, I'm the leader of the practice. Some of those dynamics play a role. The other thing I do more recently is I do departmental meetings. And I hate to sound like it's some kind of bureaucracy, but I take my three hygienists out. Me and Dr. Leedy, my associate partner, we'll go to sushi and we'll sit down with them. We'll talk about what's going well, what's going not so well. They'll give us feedback about what we're doing well, where we're making the things that we complain about that they're not doing. They'll come back and say, well, if you just shut up and let us tell you what we talked about, then, you know, you wouldn't have these issues.
Oh, yeah.
So I did that with my assistants recently.
Okay.
And the assistant said, hey, we need another assistant. You know, they're very worried we're bringing a third dentist into the practice and I'm not adding an assistant. Most people are shocked. Like, I work with one assistant. Okay, we have one assistant per doctor in our practice.
Wow.
And I work out of one room. And I do all the dentistry I do out of one room. And so to me, when people say, I can't make it in six operatories, and to me, it's just, it's about pivoting your practice to a different area, which is not, can't be done overnight. But anyway, they would talk to me about, we need another assistant. I go, well, you know what that means? She goes, yeah, that means our monthly number is going to have to go up. So they already know that if they bring somebody in, that bonus number has to go up, because everything's tied to the employee compensation. So to me, our bonus number is tied directly to overall employee compensation. So when they want to bring somebody in or, you know, take somebody out, it's tied directly to that. So to me, that those are some of the basic keys of being able to really attract the best, retain the best, and avoid any really difficult conversations. And I also, the other thing as I try to do, and I would encourage you to do this even before you're an owner, is, you know, I get to know my team members. I try to sense their stress. I ask them how home life is going. I'll say to somebody, like, look, one of my team members came into my office making $12 an hour, okay? Intern, no experience whatsoever. I sat down with them, I said, listen, I don't know how you live on this. Talk to me about what's going on. You know, talk to me about where your spending is, what are you doing? And I'll talk to them about, I'll get in their life a little bit, and I'll say, you know, some of these decisions aren't good decisions, right? You know, and so you can help sometimes protect yourself by being preemptive in people making dumb decisions. Like I had a person that wanted to buy a new car, and I'm like, you can't, and this is dumb. Yeah, here's what I said to her. I said, here's what's gonna happen. You're gonna go buy this car, and then a few months down the road, some bill's going to come up. You're not going to have enough money. You're going to come to me asking to borrow money. I'm going to say no. I'm already telling you up front. I'm going to say no. Or you're going to ask for a raise, and I'm going to say, we haven't earned that. What are some of the other challenges that you're having in the practice where to get to where you want to go?
I think initially it was getting busy enough.
Okay.
And I like to hear you say that you work out of one operatory.
One operatory.
And maybe I've been kind of approaching it the long, you know, I think I need three rooms and need two scheduled and one for emergencies and then need to be running.
Well, have you done the numbers? Have you worked backwards? Like, what is your daily goal? What is your weekly goal?
No.
Right.
I think that's a bit, I mean, we have rough numbers, and that's been something that's also transitioned.
But you got to have your number.
Right, my own
right?
numbers.
Because you're paid as an associate, I assume. So you're paid a percentage of what you collect.
Right.
So you have your own number that you want to hit, right?
Right.
So let's use fake math, okay,
sure.
If you don't mind. Let's say you get paid 30% of what you collect, okay? So, like, and let's say you want to make, what, $1,000 a day, ideally? Maybe
sure.
$2,000 a day, whatever the number is. So I look at the math, and I say, I want to make $3,000 a day. Okay, I have to collect $3,000 a day to make the money I want to make, right?
Right.
So then what I look at is I say, what does my schedule look like? So let's go through this real quick, okay, of producing $3,000 a day, okay? So you have three hygienists.
Yes.
So you're going to do half the hygiene checks?
Yeah, roughly.
Okay, so three hygienists, going to see 24 patients, so you're going to do 12 hygiene checks. So 12 times $30, you get credit for the exams.
Yes.
So that's $360.
Right.
Okay. So now we're at $2,600, okay? So now, how many fillings can you do in a day? Not, and be happy, four, five, 10,
yeah,
six,
yeah.
Five?
Five
would be great, okay? So that's another what, average reimbursement, $120, $140, $150?
Sure.
So let's call it $150, so that's $750. Now we're down to $1,900, okay? And you've probably seen your hygiene checks, probably two to three patients to do your fillings. Okay, now can you do one crown a day? Is that reasonable?
Yes.
Okay, so what's that, $900?
Yeah.
Including the buildup and everything? You guys are on PPOs?
Yeah.
Yeah, so $900. So now you're down to $900 a day is what you have left to do. Can you do a second crown per day? Is that reasonable?
Yes.
Okay, so now you're at your goal. So to really do your goal, you only need to really schedule two crowns, five or six fillings, and do your hygiene checks, and you're at your goal every day. Now you tell me, why do you have to work out of more than one room? It's a rhetorical question.
No, yeah, that
but
makes
how do you have to work out of more than one room to accomplish that?
I think that makes sense. You know, the first year when I was limited in one room most of the time,
right.
The issue I'd run into is if I had a no-show or
right.
if what was scheduled for a crown ended up being an extract, you know, or
sure.
you know, random things happen like that. And when I see those numbers fall. And so
okay.
my immediate solution was,
well, make it up the next
day. I
need
to be able to, well, I should, yeah. That would be the easier
or diagnose better.
Yes.
Right. So why it happens to all of us. Okay. We intend to do something and it turns into something else. Right.
Right.
It happens to all of us. But that shouldn't be happening very often. Right.
Right.
To me, that's a failure to diagnose on the front end, or that's a failure to have a tough conversation with the patient. Patient doesn't want to hear they're going to lose the tooth. So you say, let me be nice and try to save the tooth, knowing good and well
guilty.
That you know exactly what's going to happen, but you want to make the blow a little bit easier by saying, at least you tried.
Yeah, I have to say that's something I do often.
Yeah, so to me, those are self issues, right?
Mm-hmm.
I interrupted. Go ahead.
No, that's exactly right. And I think instead of thinking I need to be running two or three rooms mm-hmm. and doing the hygiene checks at one time,
yeah.
Looking at the numbers.
No. There's different models out there,
right.
right? The model that your dad practiced in, I'm not saying he's right or wrong, but that model is one model,
right.
successful for him. Doesn't mean that you just have to recreate that same model. It could mean that you do it smartly. Now, if I were him, I would recreate my model and let you run the old model.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I would do. That's what I've done, right? You know, that's essentially what I've done, but... It's just a different way of looking at things. And the statement I use over and over again, the dentistry that we did in the 1980s and 90s, the way we ran our practice, the way we worked our rooms and our schedule, does not hold true. It is not the most efficient and ideal way to do it in the 2018s. By the way, we're only 2 years from it being the 2020s. Right?
I didn't think about
it. We were 2 years from being 2020. And in a way, many of the mindsets that I'm hearing from you are mindsets of the late 90s, early 2000s, mid 2000s. And it has to change. You have different technology. You have different options available to you. You have different services that you can provide. You have a gold mine that you're walking into 3,000-4,000 active patients who, because of your last name, automatically trust you. Okay? It's not like you're an associate in my practice and they still want me to double check do they really need this right. or not, right?
Right?
I mean, by your last name being the same as your father's, you know, there's a built-in trust there. And so, you know, take advantage of that. I mean, it's an envious position to be in, to be able to do that. And to me, that's the beauty of it. So talk to me about the mentoring in your practice. How is that working?
Very well. I think that was the biggest reason why I didn't do, say, GPR or an AEGD or what have you, is that I knew that I had my dad to work with.
Okay.
Now it hasn't been the exact situation that I had in mind, meaning
the way you dreamed it up to be.
The way I dreamed it up, right.
The rainbows and unicorns that you expect
exactly.
mentoring to be.
Yeah, nothing ever is, but it's been something that I think we kind of talked about this earlier, is that I've had to kind of reach out and ask for, and it's there, and I think you've pointed out correctly that not necessarily everyone wants to be a mentor or is going to be the one that you know, initiates that relationship.
Yeah.
I think if you want to learn and you want
I would say the
to
vast
grow,
majority are not that way.
Right. And it's not, and I don't think it's that everyone has that mentality of, oh, you need to do it on your own and figure out yourself. I think most people want to help and teach, but they're not going to make you learn. They're not going to, you know, and so you've got to approach situations. Yeah.
So most people think of mentoring as,
right,
here it is. I'm ready to mentor you.
Right.
Come take it from me. And I look at mentoring as the absolute opposite. It is more you being pushy and saying, hey, tell me about this, tell me about that. You extracting, sorry the pun, but you extracting that out. And everybody I've talked to that's had an unbelievable, wonderful mentored relationship that helped them in their career, nobody handed it to them.
Right.
They extracted it out and made the most of it. And to me, when I say to people, you need to get a good mentor, I'm not saying find somebody that's giving it to you. You got to find somebody that has it within them, and you've got to take it out of there, because life gets in the way.
Yeah.
And
and that's how my dad and I's relationship has been. You know, we share an office, and I hey, what do you think of this?
Yeah.
What do you think of that? That's when you get your best, isn't it? Yes.
Yeah. You get the best out of him from an educational perspective when you ask.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
You know. Very rarely is he, dude, the guy's got other things on his mind. He's got, you know, a payroll, he's got a new building, he's got this, he's got a son in college, he's got another son, he's got a, you know, got a family life, he's got his own hobbies. You know, he's got all, the last thing, you know, your son, so he cares, but the last thing he's worried about is, man, I got to do my daily mentoring for you today, so.
Right.
Well, Zachary, we didn't, Zach, correct?
Yeah.
Zach, I like either one, but we didn't intend to record today.
Nope.
But our conversation at lunch was really good. I thought some of the things we brought up were fantastic.
Yeah,
well, you're a good sport. Are you always this quiet?
Sometimes. Most of the time, yeah.
Most of the time.
Yeah.
You silent killer millennials. I want to see good things from you. And a size large, you want a sweater or a polo?
Oh, I don't know.
Because I have the
polo
on underneath.
We like the polo better.
Okay, I'll get you a polo. It's cheaper, so. I'll be happy to get you the polo. The sweaters are hard to find.
I appreciate that.
I'm just honest, man.
Yeah. Enjoyed it.
Thank you, Zach. Appreciate it. Thank you. So we look forward to having you guys back for our next episode next week. And my only ask of you is a couple of asks is leave us a great review on iTunes, comment below on YouTube or Facebook, share this with family, friends, or anybody so I can get my download numbers up, and reach out and communicate what you would like to see. If you have questions for Zach, you have questions for me, like some topic you'd like us to cover, just ask and see what happens. So thanks for tuning in this week, and make it a great day.
Thanks so much for listening to T-Bone Speaks with Dr. Tarun Agarwal. Remember to keep striving for excellence, and we'll catch you on the next episode.